Vikshyalakabritamukam tabakundalasti Gandhastaladharasudham asithavalokam Dathabhayam sabhujadandayukamilokya Vakshasriyaika ramanam chabhavamadasya Seeing your face encircled by curling locks of hair, your cheeks beautified by earrings, your lips full of nectar, and your smiling glance, and also seeing your two imposing arms which take away all fear, and your chest the only source of pleasure for the goddess of fortune, we must become miracles. Purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur envisions the gopis' dealings with Krishna as follows. Krishna says, you want to become my servants? So do I have to buy you with some payment? Or are you giving yourselves freely? The gopis reply, since the beginning of our youthful womanhood, you have been purchasing us with a payment millions and millions of times more than enough. That payment is your gem-like smiling glance, which constitutes a great treasure we have never heard about or seen anywhere else. When you put your golden turban on your head, your maidservant will act as your valet, pulling up the turban a bit by bit until it is in just the right position. And even while you shake a chastising finger at her, trying hard to prohibit her, she will put her hand beneath your turban and take the opportunity to glance at your face. Thus we, your maidservants, will relish with our eyes your abundant sweetness. Krishna says, your husbands will not tolerate this misbehavior of ours. They will complain bitterly to King Kamsa, thus producing a fearful situation for me and for you as well. The gopis say, but Krishna, your two mighty arms make us fearless, just as they did when you held up Govardhan Hill to protect us from the pride of Mahendra. Those arms will certainly kill the beast Kamsa. But being a religious person, I cannot make others' wives my maidservants. O dear crest jewel of religious personalities, you may say that you refuse to make the cowherd wives your maidservants, but by force you have already taken Lakshmi, the wife of Narayan, from Vaikuntha, and are carrying her around on your chest. Out of shame, she has assumed the form of a golden lion on your chest, and she takes her only pleasure there. Besides, within all the 14 worlds, and even above these worlds in Vaikuntha Loka, beyond this universe, you never reject any beautiful woman, no matter who she is or whom she belongs to. We know this quite well. Om Agyan Janidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Lilitam Jena Tasmoy Sri Guru Venama Vansha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindubya Evacha Patithanam Pavanibyo Vaishnavebyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sriyadvaita Garadhara Srivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Seeing your face encircled by curling locks of hair, your cheeks beautified by earrings, your lips full of nectar, and your smiling glance, and also seeing your two imposing arms which take away our fear, and your chest which is the only source of pleasure for the goddess of fortune, we must become your maid servants. In this wonderful dialogue between Shyam Sundar and the gopis, we find the sweetness of the pure love that is shared between the Lord and his beloved servants. Madhurya Ras, the sweet love affairs between Krishna and the Braj Gopis, can only truly be appreciated by those who have not even the slightest tinge of material desires within their own hearts. In fact, it appears like the type of conversation that would take place in a romantic affair between a young man and a young woman. But actually, it is just the opposite. The original love affair is the love affair between Krishna and his pure devotees. And the so-called love of this world, the romantic interactions between young men and young women, is simply a perverted reflection of the pristine and ecstatic loving relationships between Krishna and the gopis. In fact, everything that exists within this world has its origin in Krishna and in Krishna's lila. We find in the spiritual world there is lust, attachment, greed, envy, pride, all of the qualities that cause bondage, frustration, and suffering in this world. In their original form, which is pure, and which is created by the Lord simply to increase the ecstasy of loving affection, some foolish people, they think that the authors of the scriptures, they have superimposed human emotions on Krishna and his dealings with his devotees in order that a human being with sensuous desires may be able to relate and find attraction to the subject matter of Krishna Katha, that this is a device to make God very much like us so that we can relate to him. But in fact, it is just the opposite. All the human-like qualities that we find within our own lives, within this earth, they have their origin in Krishna. Because Krishna is a person, we are persons. Because we are part and parcel of Him. But as a part and parcel, by forgetting our relationship with Krishna, we become imperfect persons. And similarly, all the attributes that are part and parcel of Krishna, which are all the attributes within human nature, they are perfect when they are connected to Krishna. But when they are disconnected from Krishna, they become imperfect. For instance, Krishna says in Gita, Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna shamudbhava maha shanap. He says that it is lust only that is the all-devouring enemy of this world. It is never fulfilled. Therefore, it is transformed into wrath. Krishna says this lust, it is such an enemy that it burns like fire. And in the very beginning, one should give it up. What Krishna is speaking about is the natural quality, which is part of, we are eternally Jivatma, part of Krishna. All of our qualities are part of Krishna. Lust, which means material longing, material attachment. When that quality, which is the natural part of the natural energy of the soul, is directed away from Krishna, it becomes an all-devouring enemy. It becomes the cause of all sorrow and frustration, because it is misused, misdirected. But that same energy, that same lust, when it is directed toward Krishna in His loving service, lust, when it is directed toward Krishna in its purified state, is not selfish. In this material world, all of our qualities are based on self-motivation for sense gratification. But the original energy of every soul is to be directed toward Krishna for His pleasure, in His service, without any motivation for one's own selfish purposes. And we become completely attached to the object of our love. So here we find, in the gopis' love of Krishna, we find the original, pure, perfect form of the spiritual energy of the soul. And in this world we find the perverted reflection. Similarly, the gopis, how much greed they had in their heart. In this material world, a greedy person is condemned. A person who has greed is a person who's willing to defy all sanctity of relationships with others in order to somehow or other get more and more and more for himself, to accumulate far beyond his needs, and is never satisfied. But if that same energy, that same propensity, that same quality is properly placed in the service of Krishna, it becomes a selfless expression of divine ecstasy, which brings deeper and deeper satisfaction and brings the heart closer and closer to Krishna. In fact, Srila Rupa Goswami has said that the price of Krishna consciousness is greed. To have absolute greed for Krishna. But that greed is for service to Krishna. See how greedy the gopis are. They want more and more and more and more service to Krishna. They won't give it up for anything. If you're greedy for something, if someone tries to take it away from you, you'll fight ferociously to protect it. The gopis' service for Krishna, the gopis' right to give satisfaction and pleasure to Krishna, they want more and more and more. And if anyone tries to take it away, they're willing to give up anything. They're willing to give up their homes, they're willing to give up the sanctity of their chastity, they're willing to give up their prestige, their protective surroundings, security. They're willing to give up anything to preserve their service to Krishna. And in our particular condition of consciousness, we obviously cannot imitate the gopis. To try to imitate the gopis, we would be better off trying to imitate Lord Shiva by drinking an ocean of poison. But we can understand through the words of the acharyas how on our level of consciousness we can follow in the footsteps of the gopis. And that is to be greedy to hear the glories of the Lord. Krishna Katha is the purifying agent of this world. The manifestation of Krishna to attract the hearts of all of us to His loving service. Therefore, we should cultivate a greed to hear more and more and more about Krishna consciousness. We should never be satiated. The more we hear about Krishna, the more we should want to hear about Krishna. This was Maharaj Parikshit's qualification for the perfection of life. He was so greedy, so anxious to hear the glories of the Lord. The more his ears would hear, the more they became greedy for more and more of this sound vibration. He could not get enough, and nothing would get in his way from hearing the glories of the Lord. Because Krishna reveals himself according to how we approach him. The more we genuinely are aspiring to hear his glories, the more he reveals himself through the sound vibration of his holy name and his holy instructions, his holy pastimes. And how to develop this greed? Shushushro Shuddhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi San Mahatsevaya Vipra Punya Tiratana Sevana. Factually, when you are greedy to hear the glories of the Lord, Krishna from within your heart will reciprocate and cleanse all misgivings and reveal himself from within your heart. It is by service to the great souls that we develop this greed for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. We should be greedy for service. But what does it mean to be greedy? It doesn't mean we put ourselves. Greed in this world means you're willing to step on other people's heads to fulfill your greedy propensities. But that is not greed for service. That is greed for enjoyment. Greed for service means Gopi Bharatura Padakamalayora Dasa Dasa Anudas. You don't step in front of anyone, but you step below everyone. Anxious, and more anxious to serve the Vaishnavas, the Guru and Krishna. The more service you get, the more you want. We must cultivate this consciousness. Laziness is a great enemy to spiritual advancement. It is just the opposite. When we're lazy, we just want to do what we have to do to get by, if even that. But those who want Krishna conscious, they have to be inspired, enthusiastic, and greedy for service. They cannot get enough. They want more and more and more. And however much service is given, they're always finding ways and means to do something extra for the pleasure of Krishna, for the pleasure of Guru, and for the pleasure of the bhaktas, the Vaishnavas. And we should be so much longing and anxious for service to the Vaishnavas, so much longing to hear the glories of the Lord, to chant His holy names. At the beginning, that natural inclination may not be there. So we must, as an austerity, practice as if we were greedy for service, as if we were greedy for hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord. Because through that process, we become purified so that natural internal greed awakens within our heart. At the beginning, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam may be an austerity. We may have to stand up and move our feet to and fro just so that we don't fall asleep. But just that endeavor to hear the glories of the Lord is showing Krishna that we are wanting to be greedy to hear Bhagavad philosophy. The fact that we come every day and we're willing to do whatever it takes to stay awake and we're doing whatever it takes to be alert means there's some greed to hear the glories of the Lord, and it's being cultivated, it's being nourished, it's being strengthened by the sound vibration of Krishna Katha. There's so many other things we could be doing. We could be sleeping. We can be doing some other seva. We can be doing some work. We could be eating. We can be doing so many things at this time of the morning. But a devotee casts everything else aside. It's greedy to hear Bhagavad philosophy. And the same when we're chanting the holy names. Wherever our mind wanders, wherever it goes, we just keep dragging it back to Krishna. And we chant our rounds nicely every day. By doing this, gradually, we become greedy for more and more and more Harinam. The impersonalist philosophy is essentially to kill one's desires. But the Vaishnava philosophy is to infinitely increase our desires for Krishna. The impersonalist philosophies, they try to annihilate greed. But the Vaishnavas want to infinitely increase our greed for hearing, chanting, and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His names, His qualities, and His pastimes. And Krishna, in the spiritual world, He increases the greed and the lust of His devotees by so many wonderful means. Just like here, the gopis, first He played His flute. The gopis, they're always longing for Krishna. But when they heard His flute, that longing became so unbearable and uncontrollable that they just left everything to be with Krishna. There was no question of family attachment or attachment to even life itself. And then when they came before Krishna with their hearts flaming with the longing to serve their beloved, to give pleasure to their beloved, at that time Krishna rejected them. He told them, "You go home." And those words were like pouring millions and millions and millions and trillions, infinite liters of petrol upon the fire of their burning hearts. Simply to increase their attachment, their lust, and their greed for Krishna. The gopis, their hearts, their minds, their entire existence is just a burning, raging fire, consuming their entire consciousness simply for the purpose of giving pleasure to Krishna. What type of love is this? This is perfect love, pure love. Super excellent quality of the highest spiritual status. And throughout this Raslila, step by step by step, Krishna is simply acting in such a way to increase the fire of longing and affection in the hearts of the gopis. And Krishna, when He sees the ecstasy of love rise in the hearts of His devotees, the ecstasy of love increases within His own heart. In this way, there is an eternal competition between the lover and the beloved to give love to one another and to increase the pleasure of the other's love. So actually, in the same way, according to our particular realization of Krishna consciousness in this world, Krishna, who is within our heart, and who is also in and between every atom and within the heart of every living being, He is in so many ways calling us back home, back to Godhead, and giving us so many wonderful opportunities to increase our affection, to increase the intensity of our greed and our longing for His service. And a devotee recognizes that. And a devotee who is sincere, he responds positively to Krishna's merciful invocations and invitations. We can see, just by examining our own consciousness, how unfortunate, how little love and affection we have for Krishna. In fact, this is the beginning of self-realization. When we read the beautiful story of the gopis' love for Krishna, the first thing that should come to our minds is how I have no love for Krishna. What am I willing to give up for Krishna? How stagnant my heart is. How little taste I have for hearing his glories, for chanting his names. The gopi's entire consciousness was inflamed, engulfed in the fire of attachment to Krishna. There's hardly a particle of a spark within our own hearts. Where is my love? Where is my affection? In fact, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he prayed like this. He said, I have no love for Krishna. Not little, but none at all. Because if I had even a trace of love of Krishna, I would have died long ago in separation from him. When you have the realization, you have nothing. But you want that thing. Then you'll do anything for it. And this is what we can learn practically from this wonderful story of the Rasa-lila. After seeing the pristine, magnanimous love of the gopis for Krishna, we must come to the realization that comparatively we have no love of Krishna. If we think we even have a drop after hearing this beautiful story, then we are in total illusion, totally infatuated by false pride. We have no love for Krishna. But we read about it. We hear about it. We want it. Because unless we have Krishna's love, we cannot satisfy Krishna. When they asked Prabhupada, what is the greatest service we can do for Krishna? He said, to love him. Because whatever we offer, to the degree it's offered with love, it gives satisfaction to Krishna. And our life is meant to satisfy Krishna, so we desperately require that love to give him that satisfaction. And there isn't any. We search through our hearts, from the top to the bottom, to the deepest recesses, we don't find a trace of real love. So we'll do anything for that. We'll sacrifice anything for that. We'll accept anything for that. Rupa Goswami says that for even a drop of love of Krishna, whatever you have to give for it, do it immediately. You will not be the loser. So we must give up our lethargy. We must give up our laziness. We must be willing to put aside everything of this earth if that is what is required to acquire even one drop of love of Krishna. If we are willing to do that, Krishna will give us his love. If we are not willing to do that, Krishna will give us something else. Krishna will always give us something. But if you want the real thing, You have to pay the real price. And what is that price?
Greed.
That's all. The price is greed. The price is you have to be willing to do anything or not do anything, to give up anything or to accept anything for that love. Is there any questions? Bigaline, would you like to add anything? So let us all become very greedy for Krishna. Greedy for hearing Bhagavatam. Greedy for chanting his names, greedy for serving his beautiful form of Radha Gopinath, greedy for serving the dust at the feet of his devotees. Give anything for that. For a particle of dust that falls from the feet of the devotees of Vaishnava, we should be willing to give our whole fortune, our whole life, our whole intelligence, everything. That's how much we should be greedy for Krishna.
Thing about Srila Prabhupada was that Bhaktisiddhanta Mark that I will initiate him because he has a strong desire to hear. He always used to talk about this, that his Guru Maharaj saw in him a great desire to hear about Krishna. Because he knew if there was a strong desire to hear, then someday he would be a good preacher. So when it came time for initiation, I think in Allahabad, someone recommended him. He said, yes, I will initiate him immediately. I have marked him. He likes to hear about Krishna.
Very well.
Just recently before that, Prabhupada went to Koshi for the Bhakti Siddhanta's Vrajmandala Parikram, and there was big beautiful tents, a whole civilization, Bhakti Siddhanta. There were thousands of people in his Parikram, and it was announced by Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj. Then he was a brahmachari, of course. He announced that we are going to Sheshashayi to see the beautiful deity of Vishnu. So everyone who wants to come, please come. But also Guru Maharaj Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati will be giving darshan tonight, speaking from Bhagavat. So Srila Prabhupada was thinking that seeing the form of Krishna, the Murti, is very nice. But hearing the words of Gurudev is the most vital and important thing. So he stayed back. And the common devotees, they all left. It was just a handful of the most intimate sannyasis and some others that were sitting. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was speaking for hours and hours. And others had other duties, or they were getting tired, it was late at night. So they were going, coming, going, coming, going, going. But Abhay Charan, he sat in rapt attention, simply absorbing the nectaring words of his Gurudev. He wouldn't go anywhere. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had that divine spiritual power to see right into the heart of Srila Prabhupada how anxious he was to hear. For for hour after hour after hour until finally Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati ended his dissertation. Prabhupada was sitting there in rapt attention. So it was just very shortly after that in Allahabad that he was recommended for initiation, as Sri Galim Prabhu was saying. One brahmachari named Atula Ananda recommended him. And generally, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he would not give initiation very freely. He would very much screen people, question people, test people. But as soon as he saw Abhay Charan and heard, to everyone's great surprise, he immediately accepted. He said, I will gladly initiate him because I have marked that he loves to hear. He is anxious to hear. He does not go away. And he gave him first and second initiations together on that day. And later on, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also, he had so many publications. The Harmonist was one. And he had just incredible quantities of scholarly disciples. Great, great scholars. Great, great pundits. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he trained his brahmacharis and sannyasis to be scholars of the scriptures and to be great preachers. He very, very consciously, deeply trained them. And Abhay Charan was a grihastha. And Bhaktisiddhanta told the editors and co-editors of his publications that anything Abhay Charanaravinda writes, you print it. Don't consider whether it's worthy or not. You just print it. And he said the same thing. Because he hears so nicely, whatever he writes is perfect. Publish. And of course, hearing doesn't simply mean to sit and to listen. Hearing means to listen with a willingness to put it into your life. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati saw that Prabhupada's quality of hearing was not that he was just sitting, listening. But whatever he was hearing, he was willing to act upon. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave him the order to preach Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya's message all over the world in the English language. And as soon as Prabhupada heard that, he heard it and he took it deeply into his heart with the willingness to sacrifice everything to do it. And he did. He gave up his family. It's not that his family were not nice people. They were wonderful, loving people. But if they weren't willing to assist him in this worldwide preaching mission, he couldn't tolerate that they were coming between him and the order of his guru. So he left them. To this day, they're angry with him. And he left the comforts of life. He went to Vrindavan with nothing, not even one paisa. And he knew to preach the message, he had to have some books to distribute. He heard his words of his guru so much. His guru told him directly and personally, if you get money, print books. He had no money. He was begging. Just to get some money to print the Bhagavatam. He was spending his entire life. Recently at the Radha Ballabha temple, We met one of the Goswamis. He said when he was a little boy, he used to play with the Goswamis from the Radha Damodar temple. Every now and then he would go to Rupa Goswami's samadhi to just fall on his knees praying fervently. But the rest of the day, he would simply be in his room writing, writing, and writing. Balaram Maharaj from Lodra, he explains that he lived with Prabhupada for some time. He was young. He used to bring prasad for Prabhupada and put it outside of his room. Prabhupada would be so immersed in writing, sometimes the prasad would sit there all day. He would forget eating. Because he knew to fulfill what he had heard from his guru, he had to write these books. And then as soon as those books were finished and printed, what he heard from his guru to spread the mission of Lord Chaitanya all over the world in the English language, he left Vrindavan. He had nothing except those books. And he came to Bombay to beg for a ticket. To beg. He was every day begging Sumati Murarji, and she was refusing every day because she thought for sure he will die. It's such a terrible, hard journey across the Atlantic Ocean, and New York is such a violent and cold place. But he completely defied all material considerations. Why? Because he sat there and heard his guru tell him, "You preach." And he went across the Atlantic. Heart attacks, seasickness, nausea, terrible spinning headaches. You can't imagine the suffering. Then he came to New York City, Butler, Pennsylvania. No help, freezing cold, people threatening to murder him. Whatever little he had, stolen. No place to stay, no place to eat. Any time he could have got back on that boat and moved back to Vrindavan and lived a peaceful life. But his guru did not want that. His guru was against going to Vrindavan to live a peaceful life. His guru wanted his disciples to fearlessly travel through the world and preach the message of Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada, he gave his life for that. That is called hearing. Not just sitting and just letting words come into your brain. But when Bhakti Siddhanta saw in Prabhupada, he was anxious to hear and he was anxious to execute whatever was being heard. That is hearing. And therefore he became the supreme, most empowered representative of his Gurudev. So that type of greed. Greed to hear the glories of the Lord and greed to put it into action.
Prabhupada's life where he became so immersed in Bhagavatam that when his wife sold his Bhagavatam for tea biscuits, he left his home. But when that part of his life, Krishna was gradually taking everything away from him. So he was practically just reading Bhagavatam all day. There was no income coming in for the family. So the wife was worried that there's no money coming in. So when he was out one day, she took the Bhagavatam and sold it for tea biscuits. So when he came back and he couldn't find his Bhagavatam, which was his most sacred item, Then he asked his wife, where is the Bhagavatam? And she said, I've taken it to the market and sold it for tea biscuits. And that was the last straw. And he walked out of the house and never came back.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda. Hare Krishna.